Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone. Today, I will be chatting with April McMurtry. April is a professional reading specialist, dyslexia specialist, author, and the developer of the Learn Reading program. She has been helping struggling and dyslexic students for over 30 years, breaking through their reading barriers to unlock the world of words. April is currently preparing for a TED Talk about dyslexia awareness that I cannot wait for. Her book, Is It Dyslexia?, is now out on shelves, and she also has resources that will help struggling and dyslexic students, parents of those students, and parents who are those students, including dyslexia screenings and online courses. Links to her book and website will be in the show notes. In today's episode, we will discuss how common dyslexia is, the signs and symptoms of dyslexia, how you can advocate and help your child with dyslexia, talents and strengths that people with dyslexia may have, and much more. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Hello, everybody. Today we have April McMurtry here on the podcast. Welcome, April.
Thank you.
So today we are going to be talking all about dyslexia, which I was briefly chatting with April beforehand, telling her that I am really excited for this podcast because my husband and I, have been trying to learn as much as we can about dyslexia to help support one of our kids who was recently diagnosed. And I have found so many fascinating things along the way so far. And I feel like, you know, before I had this connection, right, to my child who was diagnosed with it, you hear the word dyslexia, and I don't know about you, but I just think about, oh, okay, well, when they look at their B's and their D's, they get mixed up, or they look at their P's and Q's and they get mixed up. And it's so much more than that. So can you just start off by telling us, what is dyslexia?
So dyslexia is neurobiological in origin. So it has an inherited condition, it's genetic, and it affects all four ways that you process language: through your eyes in reading, through your mouth in speaking, through your ears in how you're processing sounds, and hand in writing, in spelling. So it is an unexpected difference. So it's unexpected because the people who have it are typically average intelligence or above average intelligence. But for some reason, they have this unexpected struggle with reading and spelling. So that is dyslexia in a nutshell.
And this is what I found to be really fascinating, but how common is it?
About 20%.
So that's one in five of us, right, that struggle with this. And we're talking about this beforehand, but I mean, we found out our child has it. And then, of course, we're like looking at each other, okay, where'd it come from? You know, the more we read about it, the more my husband's like, this was definitely me. And I have found it to be so fascinating. The book that I'm currently reading, it talks about the different strengths that people with dyslexia can have. And I start to see those within my husband, just with the work that he does and his everyday life. I'm like, wow, that's actually really, really fascinating. So when we are, I know as a parent, this can be really stressful. I've talked about this a few times in a few different episodes, just how you can advocate for your child if you think something might be wrong, especially in those elementary years where, you know, kids might be struggling for, you know, any variety of reasons. Our particular child was struggling a lot with reading. I mean, a lot, and wasn't making
any progress despite multiple interventions at school, like tiered help and such. And I, as the parent, really had to advocate. They were not pushing through. They did not want to evaluate her last year in first grade. And so I really pushed for it at the beginning of this year because I really wanted to get her access to more help, like through an IEP, if I could. So she ended up being diagnosed as being dyslexic, which I was like, honestly, it was almost like this breath of fresh air because I was like, okay, well, we have something that we know and we can work through this. And just knowing that my husband possibly went through his entire life thus far, not knowing these struggles were attributed to something that also has these significant strengths, which I feel like is such a superpower for those particular people. It can help you, you know, understand, especially as a child, like, okay, I have weaknesses, but I also have these strengths. And so it can be just helpful to name what it is sometimes, you know? And so we were really, really happy to have an answer and move forward with it and really help embrace our child within her struggles, but also trying to point out her strengths.
I love that you found relief in the identification of the condition. That reminds me of my oldest student that I've ever had. Her name was Gertie, and she was 75 years old when I finally screened her for dyslexia. And when I told her that that is why she has struggled with reading and writing her whole life, she told me that that was out of all of the memories of her entire 75 years of building and successfully running two businesses and all of her happy family memories. Her favorite memory was realizing that she was not any less intelligent than anybody else. She was simply dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And she told me she was actually about just a few days from dying, and she still was clinging to that knowledge about herself, that how grateful she was to know that she was dyslexic. And that after I taught her for a year and a half or so, she was so excited to finally read and spell the words that she's been struggling with her whole life. And her dying wish was to share her brain with Harvard University so that they could do some studies and continue to research dyslexia so that other people wouldn't have to go their whole life without knowing what it is and struggling with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for knowing, you know, okay, I have this, this is what I'm going to struggle with. And these, you know, on the opposite side of that, I also have these significant strengths and I can play off of those and work really hard with my weaknesses. It's just, I feel like it just helps to reframe everything for you, right?
Yeah. I like how you said reframing it. That's perfect. Yeah. And they don't even have to struggle after they realize what it is. Then they can get the type of instruction that is specific for a dyslexic mind. Plus, they will have all of those talents and strengths that other people don't have. That's more than a win-win. That's a double win.
Right. And so truly, if I were to kind of express anything within this entire podcast, it would be if you think something's going on with your child, really, really fight for them, because the earlier, the better, and you can get that help and they'll be able to get knowledge of tools. You can build upon these tools throughout the coming years of their school age, you know, these 12 years, they can collect all these tools and use them as they need to help them along the way. Whereas, you know, my husband looks back and he's like, well, I could have used some of that, right? He had to improvise and create his own way with no help. So I can't imagine what that is like with nobody noticing that you're struggling really, really hard, but you're trying like three times as hard as everybody else when it comes to these specific things. And, you know, I was dating him when he was in med school, and he would be in the library forever. And he's like, I just have to be in the library longer than everybody else because he's reading and reading and reading. And he's like, I always have to read things like three times, you know, for it to fall flat. And so it's even more impressive, you know, what he's been able to do with his life. But I do think that being dyslexic also makes him incredibly, incredibly good at what he does in emergency medicine, right? Like his brain can be somewhere in seven different areas at one time, right? Like
absolutely.
He can help to manage things, just multiple things going on at once.
Absolutely.
It was fascinating to kind of learn more about that.
Yes. I've interviewed a couple people to do different things for us. And when I, if I find out that they're dyslexic, that is a bonus, because I know that how talented and strong and skilled they're going to be in the areas that I'm desiring help in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we think about dyslexia, what are we looking for? I guess we should probably start off with the younger kids and kind of as they grow up through elementary school, what are the signs and symptoms that we should be looking out for?
So when they're very young, and when they're just toddlers, they will be the, well, there are a lot of signs and symptoms, but not every dyslexic will have every sign. But it's typical that they will be a delayed talker. They will have a delayed speech or a little bit of a late talker. They won't be really talking in complete sentences until well past, you know, 2.5 years old. They will also have a, typically have a hard time with articulating certain sounds or certain sounds within words, or they will have a hard time remembering the letters of the alphabet and the sounds that they make. Mm-hmm. Remembering rote random facts as they're getting older, like multiplication tables, or going, even though they can understand the concept of multiplication just fine, when it comes down to recalling those facts quickly, that will be more difficult to them. Memorization of certain things will be difficult. Directionality, you'll see it when they are learning to tie their shoes. Sometimes those, because that is directionality just in crazy directions, right? Same with long division. Long division is right and then left and then up and then down. So long division might be difficult. Reading will be, for the most part, well, some kids can, with dyslexia, can read just fine. Or at least they can read in an acceptable level. They might not get flagged for dyslexia signs and symptoms based on their reading alone. But one thing that everybody should watch for is difficulty with spelling. If somebody has a hard time spelling, even though they can read a word just fine, if they go to spell it, if that's a different story, then that is a big red flag for dyslexia. That coupled with a family history, those two things, if there is a family history of academic struggles plus difficulty with spelling, then I would highly suggest considering pursuing a dyslexia evaluation.
Yeah. And like I said, I feel like so many people don't even realize that they have dyslexia. So it can be hard with the family history, because that was one of the questions. You know, they send, when they evaluate your child, they'll send you home with, you know, family history and a couple other pieces of paper to fill out for your child. And we filled it out and we're like, nah, no, you know, because we didn't know. And we still don't know. Like, he hasn't actually been like officially evaluated. Right. However, it's just, you know, when you look back, you're like, And I don't remember at all when I was younger if I had any issues with reading and spelling. My mom doesn't seem to think I did, but who knows, you know? It's hard to know.
In my screenings, I really spell out those family history questions. Like, did your mother have any trouble with spelling or reading? I even break those up into two separate categories. Did your father, did your grandfather, did your grandmother, does your cousins, your aunts and uncles have any trouble in any academic area? That really helps them to focus on a specific person. And well, they, you know, they were held back a grade for a certain, it just really helps you to think about possibilities, because you're right. Most people who have dyslexia don't know it. Mm-hmm. And they go through their whole life never knowing it.
Yes. So when it comes to diagnosis of dyslexia, what are we looking at? What does that typically entail?
A diagnosis is a little bit more, I don't want to say intensive than a screening, but there is one step that a diagnosis have that a screening doesn't, and that is an intelligence test, because dyslexics are average to above average intelligence. So there has to be that discrepancy there between their expected achievement and their actual achievement. And then the screenings, like my screenings consist of 11 different screening tasks, and we will screen for, so it's a comprehensive experience. We'll screen for a lot of phonemic awareness skills. Phonemic awareness is the core and causal factor, that is in quotes, according to Reed Lyon, who is ahead of the NIH research on dyslexia, the core and causal factor for reading struggles and dyslexia. So we screen a lot for phonemic awareness skills, also word recognition skills, memory, short-term and long-term spelling and reading, grade level decodable words, as well as irregularly spelled words. There's a whole slew of tasks that are needed to really get the broad, big picture of a dyslexic person.
Yeah, I remember when, so our daughter was being evaluated, and so at the same time she was being evaluated by the school, we were also chatting with some other special reading specialists that specialize in Orton-Gillingham and all of that. And they were giving me tips because navigating this system is incredibly difficult. So that's why I've done a couple of podcast episodes on how to navigate, because if you don't know anything about how to navigate, you know, having your child evaluated and what to ask for and how, you know, what is an IEP and all of that, it can be very confusing. So we had advice from them on different types of screenings to do, right? So, I mean, I don't know any of this stuff. This is not my wheelhouse. So they were telling me, like, make sure they do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so I'd go back and say, you know, are you definitely going to be doing X, Y, and Z? And their response was, you know, well, if we do this particular screening and then there's inconsistencies or we are worried about dyslexia, let's use that, then we will move on to these other screenings that will help us determine that. So I think, and I don't know that that happens at every school. However, at our particular school, it was if she flagged in the first or second screening, they would move on to then additionally evaluate with other screenings. So when you are talking with your school, just make sure that you have an understanding of, you know, what exactly they will be evaluating for. And if you're specifically concerned about dyslexia, you might want to ask them if they are going to be evaluating for that specifically, because I don't know that they will automatically do that if they don't necessarily think that might be one of the issues. And then I don't know if you have any advice, like if you know, someone's struggling with talking to their school and they are not evaluating for dyslexia, but the parent wants them to be evaluated, what can they do?
I would pursue an outside screening or evaluation. There are some schools that are great about screening for dyslexia specifically, but many will assess for what's called a specific learning disability, but not tell you what that specific learning disability is. They will, they will break it up into auditory processing problems and visual processing problems, which are all part of dyslexia, but that word won't be involved in the report. So if you were specifically wanting a dyslexia diagnosis, I would ask the school if that is going to be what is looked for and addressed by name in the report. And if not, then just pursue an outside evaluation of that, if that specific terminology is desired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, you know, you mentioned that, and, you know, we went to the final meeting and they did mention that. They mentioned this auditory processing. And I'm like, can you please explain this to me? Like, I'm five, because I'm still not understanding. And I was very, very clear cut. And again, this was, you know, years in the making. So I had very little patience at this point, because I'm like, I just need you to tell me what's going on and not kind of dance around with all these different terms. I don't know what this is. So I was like, does she have dyslexia? And they're like, well, yes. And I'm like, can we just name it, please? What on earth is this? I don't understand. And, you know, it's like, by actually saying that, I just feel like, you know, you're only helping her. She's going to be able to get everything that she needs specifically for someone who struggles with dyslexia. Like, can we just name it? So yeah, I did encounter that. And I'm sure they have their reasoning as to why they do that. Mm-hmm. But it is very frustrating from the point of view of the parent who's just trying to, you know, get the help that they need for their kiddo to succeed, you know? Now, I wanted to ask you this because I've heard so many varying answers when it comes to this, but how early can dyslexia be diagnosed technically? Like, do you typically wait? If you suspect a child has it, do you sometimes wait a little bit just to see how things kind of unravel? Or
so you're right. This will probably be a per screener answer. So I can only answer for myself. So for me, I won't evaluate a student myself any sooner than mid-kindergarten, and preferably mid-first grade, because a lot of the things that I am looking for can be easily overlapped with emerging learning. And I need to know where the discrepancy is. So I need to be able to peel apart what they cannot do from what they haven't let yet mastered just in a normal learning process. Mm-hmm. So I need to have them to have a good at least year and a half. That can include preschool if they had a lot of academic involvement, so that I can peel apart those two things from typical emerging reader errors from dyslexia errors.
Yeah. And that's typically kind of what I've heard when I tried to push kind of at the end of first. They're like, let's wait until, you know, the fall of second grade year and, you know, we'll dive in and try to see.
But having said that, you are right. The earlier that you can catch it, the better. So in my book, for instance, I do have screenings for kindergartners. However, it is not as comprehensive as a first grade. When I get to the first grade screenings, then I am really, okay, you should be able to see this gap by now. But as soon as possible that you can screen somebody and really recognize what they are dealing with, then the sooner you can place those interventions that they will need in front of them so that they won't have to struggle until mid or end of second grade before those difficulties are addressed. They don't have to go through that struggle and that challenge and that failure. They can be presented with the things that they need for their beautifully brilliant dyslexic minds at the time that they are encountering those reading rules that they will be learning.
Yeah, we had some curiosity sparked during kindergarten. And then I do feel like that gap got much larger in first grade. And then by second grade, we were like, that's it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like it was like that for our particular kiddo. Of course, everyone's child is a little bit different.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Factor. Factor delivers ready-to-eat, dietitian-approved meals right to your doorstep to make eating better every day easy. No prepping, cooking, or cleanup is what hooked me from the start. As a busy mom of four, this makes life so much easier for me. You can choose from over 35 different options, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, protein plus, and more. Aside from their incredibly convenient 2-minute meals, Factor also has snacks, smoothies, midday bites, and more that you can add on to your weekly order. These options are great for on the go. A few of my favorite meals so far have been the shredded chicken taco bowl that punches 44 grams of protein and the roasted garlic chicken that has about 40 grams of protein. If you need a week off or two, no problem. Factor makes it easy to pause or schedule your deliveries at any time. Personally, I love to get meals when we have busier weeks and I am unable to cook. You can head over to factormeals.com/Lindsay50, that's L-Y-N-Z-Y 50, and use the code Lindsay50 to get 50% off. That's code Lindsay50 at factormeals.com/Lindsay50 to get 50% off. The code and link will also be in my show notes.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I wanted to ask you, is there with dyslexia just this like sliding scale of you could be affected very minimally to more drastically? Or, you know, is it kind of like everybody, from what I understand from one of the books I'm reading, especially when it comes to strengths, dyslexics will have particular strengths that will differ from, you know, one person to the next, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
But as far as the struggles and the weaknesses, when it comes to like reading or spelling, for example, is there kind of like this sliding scale of what that particular child might struggle with?
Absolutely. So they will be either mild to moderate, moderate, moderate to severe, severe, severe to profound, or profound, and every little tiny micro level in between. Every student will be different in their both their weaknesses and their strengths in that continuum. It's an infinite continuum. So absolutely, there are different levels of dyslexia. And most mild dyslexics are the ones that grow up never realizing that they have dyslexia. They just know that they might need spell check a little more than the next person.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So it can kind of squeak by without you really realizing it. You might have tried a little bit harder, but you didn't really think anything of it, you know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so interesting. All right. So what are some ways, like what are some of the tips that you give to the people that you see within your practice of you know, teaching kids how to read and spell and all of that? What do you tell them about their struggles and what can they implement to like maybe some tricks or tools that you commonly tell your students?
So this is the fun part to talk about. You'll have to cut me off probably because they just need to know the why of the word. Dyslexics need to have attached meaning and logic to what they are seeing on the page. They need to know why those letters in the word are doing what they are doing. They need to know why cat is spelled with a C, kitten is spelled with a K. And as soon as you tell them the reason, then all of the words with C and K in them just opened up and they will never struggle with them again. Why this word with three different A's in it, why those A's say three different things. And as soon as you explain the logic of why each vowel and every word says what it does, which is a mystery to almost everybody, dyslexic or not. But dyslexics need to know the why of the words and then they will make sense. And it kind of turns reading into more of a math problem because it becomes logical that you can apply a formula to. It's kind of like putting a puzzle together, which they are good at. So right. As soon as you teach them what's happening within the word, strengthen their phonemic awareness, which is helping them understand or discriminate between every single sound within a word. You have to teach them this because this is something that they don't develop naturally when they are very, very young. But you have to teach them how to separate every single tiny little sound within a word and then associate a grapheme with each sound or a letter with each sound. And then, like I said, this reading and spelling becomes a fun challenge. It becomes a puzzle that they can succeed in. And that's when their eyes just light up. And that's when my 75-year-old student just said, "Why didn't somebody just tell me this 75 years ago? Yeah. I can do this now." So that's the exciting part, is they just need an instruction program that is specific for a dyslexic learner that will teach them what is happening within the words, not just memorization or guessing.
That is very interesting, actually. I did not know that. What I did read too is that some dyslexics will, and you kind of mentioned, I believe, briefly earlier, is, you know, when there are with directionality, like if there's too many directions, does that at all apply to when they're learning like the different rules when it comes to how words are spelled or things like that? Or is that kind of something separate? Like they're able to kind of take that in?
Sometimes. So we, as a dyslexia therapist, we kind of know how to navigate directionality for a dyslexic learner. We will eliminate the words right and left. We just say what they are. Going to be toward the door, toward your shoe, you know, something. We're going to take away that middle step and just call the direction what it is or where it is. But that it is needed in words because, for instance, I've developed something called the vowel placement strategy, which helps them know what a vowel is going to say based on where it sits in the word and the letters that surround it. But you have to know what direction in the word to look to know what that vowel, that first or previous vowel, is going to say. Words like previous might be a little difficult to a student with directionality issues. So we have different language that we use, and we get multi-sensory instruction is involved. So we get a lot of the senses involved, not just one or two, so that it all kind of makes sense and clicks for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wanted to mention something too that I thought was really cool. So what we're trying to do is point out to our child what her strengths are. We're trying to figure out where her strengths are, right? And really help emphasize those. Like, hey, this is that really cool superpower that your brain has that mm-hmm. I don't have, you know? And so it's been cool because she often compares herself to her brother because her brother is 2 years younger, but he's reading at the same level. And so she struggles a lot with that, obviously, right? Because she's like, well, how come he can read? Like, I can read. I don't get it. So the other day, they're both putting together these little Lego dinosaurs. So they were like these, it came with like 25, 30 pieces per dinosaur. And she's given these little instructions. They're super tiny. And there's like five steps in one. Like, I looked at it and I was like, I don't think I have the patience for this. Like that's me as an adult, right? Like, so I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't think so. So she opens this thing up and I kid you not, I mean, it had to have been less than 10 minutes. She's built this dinosaur, okay? Meanwhile, my son over next to me, he's starting to throw things. He's like, I don't get it. And he rebuilt it three times, okay? And so I was like floored because I was like, wait, this is really, really cool. I get to finally look at her and say, hey, this is one of the really cool things that your brain does that Miles and I don't have. Like, we're trying to put together this dinosaur together and we've rebuilt it three times and you've been done for 20 minutes already. And so
exactly. I even have a congratulations video that I send to my students who I have screened, the little ones. And in that congratulations video where I tell them about the wonderful things about dyslexia, I mention, and you might be a Lego master. And so many of them are, because they are just gifted with those mechanical abilities and creativity also.
Yeah. And I found it interesting too, within one of the books I'm reading, you know, they say that a lot of these, the dyslexics that really excel with like the 3D imagery and like Lego building and all of that end up being, you know, engineers or architects or like interior designers, because they're able to see those 3D spaces completely finished when we're, you know, people that aren't dyslexic, they don't, we don't have that ability, right? Like we have no idea. We're seeing everything in 2D. So yeah, I thought it was really, really cool. So we're trying to try out these things that help to show her what she excels at, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
So I want to ask you too, what have you experienced with your students that are some of the talents and strengths that dyslexics might have besides like what we already talked about?
So they can be very gifted in a lot of areas. They can be strong in athletics. They can be very gifted in music. Like, I had one student who could play piano beautifully, but she couldn't read the music, but she could play piano beautifully. Or they can be very gifted with mechanical ability, like we were talking about. They can take things apart and put them back together and create things. They're so creative in every meaning of that word, meaning you can create things that the rest of us can't even conceive of. And they're imaginative. They can imagine. That's why they're such great designers, right? They can imagine what rooms might look like. Or they can be creative as far as with anything to do with their hands or artistic. My daughter, for instance, she was just, give her something to do with her hands and it would be beautiful. We would always say that this room has been Hannah-ized because it had little crochet hoops all over it, or some sort of art or picture. It's been Hannah-ized because of her beautiful creativity and artistic ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can also be very gifted leaders and excellent friends. They have very good people skills. So a lot of them are kind of excel in politics because they are such good leaders and very good with people. They have very good intuition. You know, they have a wonderful sixth sense that the rest of us just wish we had. Yeah, I'm jealous a lot of times.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really, really fascinating to kind of see. And what was the other thing I wanted to mention about that? Oh, for sports. So I keep going down these little, like, you know, little rabbit holes of, and I started reading about the athletic part and I was like, well, what is it about the athletics that makes them able to, you know, excel at this, you know, more so than somebody who isn't dyslexic? And it all makes sense because they're able to more anticipate what's going to happen next. Like, for example, like on the soccer field. So my daughter really took, we've tried so many different things with her throughout the years thus far to see like if she likes anything really. So soccer, I don't know what it was. It wasn't even like she had the best soccer season. Like, it was basically raining and muddy the whole season. We only played like two games, but those two games, she's like, I love soccer. No, I want to play soccer. I love it. And I think it's because of the way she sees the field. Like, I think she's able to anticipate like where the ball is going, where the passes are going. And she's just very naturally gifted at being on the field. Like, it's crazy because I didn't attach any of these things together, right? Until we got the diagnosis. And then I started reading about this and I was like, oh, wow, this is actually fascinating. Because
isn't it wonderful? Yeah.
Because I feel like one of the most important things, at least for us, when it comes to navigating this with our child, is that we really want to help emphasize her strengths to her, you know?
Good. Yeah.
I feel like that's the most important thing because the self-confidence, and we can kind of talk about this too with like the emotional and psychological aspects, but our daughter was struggling at the very end of last year so much with self-confidence. And she just came off the bus with this look of like, I've failed again all day at school. And she, you know, it was just kind of trickling into her social life and just everything else. And you could just tell that she was like very defeated, you know? Mm-hmm. And she wasn't really talking to us much about it. She kind of internalizes a lot of things until one day she'll be like, I just can't read. And then you're like, okay, this is all about that, you know? So really helping to build the confidence in the other areas and aspects of her life has been very crucial. And already seeing, you know, the positive impact of really highlighting that for her. You know, again, one of the reasons why it's so important to kind of really get this diagnosis as early as you can, because then you're able to kind of intervene and hopefully keep those negative impacts at bay. So if you want to kind of just address like some of the emotional and psychological aspects of being somebody that does struggle with dyslexia, that would be great.
Yes, I would really love to just continue the train of thought that you've already started in how addressing their strengths can build their self-confidence, which is so needed. And answer your question probably the more thoroughly in a little bit. But first, I wanted to just tag on to that as soon as they receive the type of instruction that they need that I was talking about, where words start to make sense, then all of those other areas in their life are also going to improve. Their self-confidence is going to improve, and that is going to spill into all the other social, athletic, all their other subjects. It's all going to improve because the world will open up and those shackles will fall off. And I've seen this in my students, and I've had parents talk to me about how they have a completely different child now, not only because they've built up their strengths, but because now those weaknesses are no longer seen as weaknesses, but they are seen as something that they can overcome and defeat. And so those negative feelings don't need to be suppressed or ignored or not talked about, but they are changeable. There's hope that they can be eliminated. So yes, these are the students that have to often stay in from recess because they haven't finished their assignments when recess is what they need most of all. The students that have to do homework longer than their peers so they can't do what they are good at and they have to struggle at what they're worst at. And that is defeating emotionally and mentally. Mm-hmm. And so when you have the right awareness, when you are educated in what dyslexics need, then you can address all of the little aspects of their life, strengthen their strengths as well as strengthen their weakness. And then all of the areas of their life, especially their self-esteem and their self-confidence, will improve.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, if there is somebody that wants to learn more about dyslexia, what are some of the resources that you recommend? So either websites or books that you would suggest that they read or get in?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just had a book released last week, actually, published by Wiley. Thank you. So that is called Is It Dyslexia? That book talks all about what dyslexia is and what it looks like. It has a story in there, a multi-generational story of what it looks like in real life. And then in the middle part of the book, it is at-home dyslexia screenings, thorough, comprehensive screenings that you can do at home so that you can see if your child fits that profile. And then the last half, the last third of the book is what to do now, all of the things that they will need from that point on. That book is called Is It Dyslexia? I also highly recommend the book by Sally Shaywitz called Overcoming Dyslexia. Mm-hmm. And then for a website, I love to refer people to the International Dyslexia Association.
Awesome. And I'm actually going to add on to you. I recently got this. Somebody, one of my newsletter subscribers told me about it. And I'm going to tell people listening about it because I thought it was great. I don't know if you've heard of it. So it's called, so this is a book you read with your child. And it's called Aaron Slater Illustrator. And it's this like uplifting story of this little boy who struggles a lot with reading. And he has to write this story and recite it in front of the classroom. So everybody has to like come up with their own story and write it all out and then recite it in front of the classroom. And he like goes home and he's like freaking out and struggling and struggling and can't come up with anything because he can't spell. And he ends up getting up in front of the classroom and using his imagination and being like really vivid and telling this really amazing story, but like his pages were all empty. Yeah, it was really, really cool. So it was like just this story of like, he is this phenomenal illustrator and is able to like describe this incredible scenery and illustrate it, but he wasn't able to spell, you know, spell the actual words. And so it's kind of cool because
that's wonderful.
So my daughter, when we first read it, she was like, oh, he's kind of like me, you know, because I didn't preface it with anything. We just read it. And she was like, oh, he's like me. So I just think it helps so much when kids are able to find somebody that's similar to them. It really helps
them
feel like they're less alone, just like it would for us if we were struggling with somebody. So
Thank you.
And I think there's like a whole, I haven't gotten the other ones. There's like a whole line of these books and they're all the same. And there's like Ada Twist, the scientist, Iggy Peck, the architect. And so it's all about these stories and they're real life. They're based off of real life people that they've created.
Wow. In
books. Yeah. They're really, really cool. So for anybody that wants to get those seem like they're really great. I might get another one.
Sound like they're really great. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about or address with regards to, you know, the topic that we talked about today?
My passion is dyslexia awareness, just so the 20% that are out there who have it know they have it, because most don't, so that they can get a clear picture of why they struggle and they can kind of disengage from their struggle and know that it's not them, it's their dyslexia. So if I could just invite anybody who's listening, that if you are thinking about somebody, because I can guarantee that everybody knows somebody with dyslexia and probably loves somebody with dyslexia who doesn't know that they have it. So I would invite everybody who's listening who is thinking of somebody who might possibly be dyslexic to open your mouth, to say the word, to spread awareness and to ask questions so that this knowledge that is significantly lacking, it's such a common yet unfortunately highly misunderstood condition.
Yes.
Just so the questions can be asked and answers can be found so that this information and knowledge can be spread and lives can be changed for the better because of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything else, right? Like knowledge is power. The more you know about something, the more you're able to recognize it and spread the word to other people. And mm-hmm. This information for even if this reaches one person and one person's mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, this immensely helped me or helped somebody I know, that is all we can ask for, right? Like that's the best part. Okay. So I end all my podcasts with two questions. So the first question that I have for you is, if you could give mothers one piece of advice, what would that advice be?
Listen. Just one word. Just listen. Listen to your children. That piece of advice was given to me when I had, my children are grown now and I still try to apply it. But when they were young and in the thick of thick things, I asked an older woman what she did. What was one piece of advice that she could give me? And that was what she gave me. And I've never forgotten it. And it has only helped my relationship with my children, is just to listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think so oftentimes we're, you know, I struggle with that, where my kid comes home with this story and I'm like trying to fix it all for him, you know, instead of just listening, or maybe trying to like figure out more, like, oh, tell me more about that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something that I've learned over the years, instead of just trying to like take over the conversation and almost fix something for them, like immediately, it's like actual listening part is actually more productive. Yeah, I love that. All right. Yeah. So the last question for you is, if you could make one meal for your family that everybody would eat, that's relatively quick and easy, what would it be?
Well, the first meal that comes to my mind is my personal favorite quick and easy meal, and that is a bowl of Fruit Loops with a plate of bacon and a glass of orange juice. A whole plate of bacon. I'm not talking about two or three slices.
Wait, I love how specific that was. Like, you were ready. You were ready with the Fruit Loops, the orange juice, and the bacon. That is phenomenal.
You got your sweet, you got your salty. It's all there.
My kids want to come to your house for dinner. Okay. For sure. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, thank you so much, April, for taking time out of your day to talk about this amazing topic. And I hope that everybody spreads the word and shares this podcast so that more people can learn about it.
Thanks for the invitation, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.